Welcome to episode 8 of History's Hotties, the podcast that discusses the influential but sometimes overlooked women in American history, and I am your host, Krista. So I have to share first that I took our oldest daughter to college over the weekend, so I am a sad mom this week. There is less noise in the background as I record the show, but I miss the noise. Second, this is an exciting week because at the end of the show, I will be announcing the winner of our contest. The show is short, so there won't be long to wait. And third, I have to tell you, this is like my fifth time recording the podcast because I could not get the microphone to work, and then the phone kept ringing in the middle of recording, so I have had to start over several times. So hopefully it will go fine this time. We have discussed the cult of domesticity and the definitive separation of men's and women's work in the middle and upper classes during the 19th century, especially on the East Coast, as well as early families in the colonial era and poorer families that were not able to separate and delineate work roles as dramatically because of the economic limitations of the family home that required all the members of the family to help generate income. The other way a woman actually might make her way in business and be an equal was by coming from a wealthy family and living in a less rigid and developed area. Most women, however, in the South during the colonial period, mostly we're talking today about the 18th century, experienced the same treatment that Caroline Gilman recounts in her memoirs as a Southern woman when she says that though her own husband was very willing to include her as an equal in his conversation, none of their male neighbors were willing to do the same. However, Eliza Pinckney, this week's History's Hottie, was one of those women who came from the right background and was able to break into business with intelligence and perseverance. In a time when the portrait of the ideal woman was evolving or devolving, I might say, in the South, from the woman working alongside her husband on the family farm to a pretty gentle woman with the smooth hands and the untanned face and that famous scarlet tiny waist, Eliza Pinckney was becoming something so different. Of course, this was not completely the reality, this scarlet myth, which we will learn when we talk about the real life of the plantation mistress in a later episode. But Eliza Pinckney is not just the exception to the ideal of scarlet, but she became a force of change for the entire economy of the South. She truly exemplifies the history's hottie, as we like to classify her, who is not just a partner to a famous man, but was influential and definitely underappreciated. Though you will see later that there were a couple of very important men who understood just what she contributed to our nation. Eliza Lucas was born in 1722 in Antigua in the West Indies, where her father was the governor. Eliza attended finishing school in England, but realized, as many women did, that the traditional curriculum of the female school was limited, and while she would be encouraged to enjoy reading and sewing, she really preferred botany, and we should be very glad that she was interested in botany. There is some debate over when her family moved from Antigua to South Carolina. Gail Collins gives the year as 1738, while Sarah Evans says the 1740s, so I can't give an exact date, but I do tend to lean towards that 1738 date just because of some of the other research that I've done. But soon after the family moved there, George Lucas was recalled to military duty. And during his absence, Eliza took over the management of their vast plantation along Wapoo Creek. If I've mispronounced Wapoo Creek, I apologize to all of you who live there. I did not mean to. I just really don't know how to say it. She saw what many people at the time did not, that the farming culture must be diversified to maximize profitability. So while Eliza was in charge of the vast holdings of her father's plantation, she was tutoring her sister in French, working on her own ability to do popular handicrafts of the day. She was learning shorthand, and she even set up a school for slave children with the intention that those slaves would teach their own children to read as well, to read and write. And of course, we know later teaching a slave to read becomes illegal, but I do not believe it was at the time. I'll have to look that up. Eliza's father was an ambitious businessman who encouraged her to find ways to branch out and expand farming in the South, which Eliza was willing to do, especially considering her previously mentioned love of botany. At the time, the English were buying their blue dye from France, And we all know that the French and English had at best a tolerant relationship of one another at the time. So Eliza took the indigo plant, which had really not done well in the southern climate, and began to cultivate new strains until she found one that grew so well that it just blossomed. And then she found a way to put that dye into cakes for shipping to England. Her first batch was sabotaged by a man named Nicholas Cromwells. You know, those Cromwells, just the name, they don't always have a rosy picture in history. I have no idea if this Nicholas Cromwell is related to any of the earlier Cromwells of England. But anyway, his name is Cromwell nonetheless, who was hired by Eliza's father to aid in shipping the dye to England. He added an ingredient that made the dye useless, meaning to undercut Eliza's ability to be competition for him, since he sold dye already. So Eliza's father then engages Nicholas's brother Patrick to help them, and he proved to be a much more honest and reliable partner. Not only was the dye successfully shipped this time, but it was a superior product to the French dye, and the English were able to buy this dye instead of the French dye. Within 3 years, 100,000 pounds of dye had been shipped, and this became the third largest export in the colonies, making Eliza Pinckney responsible for shaping the entire economy of the colonies. Not bad for a person whose entire sex was considered inferior. Not only was Eliza smart and successful, but she is probably the only hottie we have highlighted that when you look at her pictures, you actually look at it and you say, oh, she was pretty. And I know we can't hold women of yesterday to standards of today, and I know that you can only tell so much from a portrait, but she does seem to be particularly pretty, considering, time and age and hard work. And these two elements combined together made her about the most eligible woman in South Carolina. She was not an easy catch either. One quote from Eliza regarding one of the young men that was courting her was that the riches of Peru and Chile, if he had them put together, could not purchase a sufficient esteem for him to make him my husband. So she was as wise in love as in business and botany. The lucky guy who finally won her was Charles Pinckney, a Charleston lawyer and speaker of the Common House of Assembly in South Carolina. He had been married to a friend of Eliza's who had died previously, and he and Eliza were a very happy couple. They had four children, three of which lived past infancy, including two sons that served as generals in the Revolutionary Army. Their son Charles was a member of the Continental Congress, an aide to George Washington, a delegate to the Constitutional Convention. He served a term in the Senate. He went on to be the U.S. Minister to Spain and then served 2 years in the House of Representatives. And if this was not an impressive enough list of accomplishments for Eliza's sons, both of them actually served as the governor of South Carolina. And her other son that was also governor of South Carolina, Thomas, served as the U.S. Minister to Great Britain. So quite the legacy for this woman who made her mark in an era where few women could do that. Charles Sr. was the colonial agent to Great Britain from South Carolina, but when our nation was still just a conglomerate of colonies. But when the French and English went to war, the Pinckneys, who had been living in Great Britain for a while, fled back to the colonies. Charles Sr. contracted malaria on the way, and after 14 years of marriage with Eliza, he died. Eliza died of cancer in 1793, and recognizing her contribution to the fledgling United States, George Washington actually served as a pallbearer. So that was quite the recognition at the time. Charles Jr. went on to become one of the first planters to grow cotton in the South, following his mother in recognizing a promising cash crop. In the day of what Gail Collins calls the evolution of the first leisure class in the United States, meaning the plantation mistress or the pretty gentlewoman, Eliza defied convention and went completely her own way, and we thank her for that. She made so many great contributions. She showed what a woman could accomplish in a day when women were definitely considered inferior to men. And I thank her for giving us a great topic for this week's History's Hotties. And now to our drawing. Our winner is Corey from Alabama. Congratulations to Corey, and we are sending you your copy of Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. Thank you to everyone who entered, and I promise this will not be our last contest. There will be others. So if you have any questions, comments, or snide remarks, all of which we accept, please contact me at historieshotties@yahoo.com. That's historieshotties@yahoo.com. So until next time.